This conference is being recorded.
Hello, this is Chris Vendilli from ProFromGo.com. Today I have Michael and Sylvie 14 on the line. We're going to talk a little bit about copywriting tips and strategies that anyone can use to get a killer sales page, whether they plan on writing it themselves or possibly even contracting out to a professional copywriter. We're also going to delve into some other internet marketing tips and tricks you can use to tweak your site for maximum conversions. So, Michael and Sylvia, I want to welcome you, and thanks for doing this interview with me today. I was hoping you could just start off and tell us a little bit about yourselves and your experiences, you know, copywriter and internet marketers.
Well, my story, by the way, this is Michael Ford, and thanks, Chris, for having us on. My name is Michael Ford, and I'm a copywriter, and a lot of people probably know me as the Roger Bannister of online copywriting. And I say that because when I wrote copy for John Reese, which made $1 million in one day, it pretty much set the bar for online copy for a lot of these mega product launches that you've probably seen. And, of course, that record has been since broken many, many times by other very good copywriters. I can't really say that I'm the top copywriter online, but I'm certainly the guy who started the whole I was part of the whole process that started this whole record and record-breaking process. So that's why they call me the Roger Bannister. Now, I've written copy for a lot of top marketers out there, Frank Kern, Armin Moore, and Ryan Dice, Stephen Pierce, you name it. And in fact, that's how I met my lovely wife, Sylvie Fortin. And Sylvie, she owns a company called Workaholics for Hire, and she was doing a lot of the work with these top marketers, and we realized that we were sharing a lot of the same clients. And lo and behold, we were living next door to each other, so one thing led to another, and we got married. And now we are together creating products and services to help marketers empower their businesses, empower themselves to reach new levels of success. I'll leave the floor to Sylvie, my beautiful wife.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because when Michael and I met, he became a client of ours, and we're very fond of saying that he's the only one that got the bonus package that our company was offering. But he's absolutely correct. Working with top marketers, we've had a chance to see things from a unique perspective. A lot of the top marketers look at the industry from what they themselves have experienced and from whatever products and services that they've generated and developed and sold. And we've had a really unique privilege of being able to look over the shoulders of all of them, to watch the process from beginning to end and do our own. And essentially, we've learned what to do and what not to do from a variety of perspectives. So we literally have seen it all and have a broad spectrum awareness of the market, the more big picture analysis, as opposed to the specialized systems that a lot of marketers develop. We actually see things from the broader perspective, which is really kind of an interesting way to look at the market when you get to see everything.
That's pretty interesting. It's almost like being a member of these gurus coaching clubs for free, and you actually get to see from the inside out. That's not a perspective that many of us get to enjoy. So I'm
Precisely.
Sure you're going to give us a lot
Better
of
yet,
great insight.
Better yet, we got paid to be in the gurus coaching clubs. There's a bonus to being in the service business when you start out.
and there's another, a final comment on that is that the wonderful thing about being service providers is that we come at this industry through the back door, so to speak. We have a leg up on what a lot of marketers know because, you see, by being service providers, we've seen it all. We've seen the bad stuff and the good stuff. We've seen some of these top marketers fail tremendously. And some of the stuff that other people will never, ever know. So we have this unique knowledge of what really works, what works extremely well, and what doesn't work at all. So we're going to be giving you some great tips on this call today based out of experience and knowledge that a lot of marketers don't have.
That's a very interesting concept as well, that you mentioned that you get to see a lot of the tremendous failures that the rest of, you know, their typical clients and subscribers and members never hear about. So that would be kind of neat to hear about the things that definitely do not work, because, you know, you never know how many people might be wondering, you know, whether an idea is possible when that idea has already been tried and failed.
Exactly.
I, like I mentioned in the introduction, this purpose of this interview is kind of two-pronged. just so that it kind of pertains to everyone. First off, I wanted to kind of shape this interview towards the people who have more time than money, and they basically can't afford a professional copywriter, because we all know that copywriting is a premium priced service. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that someone who's willing to write their own copy should keep in mind, some of the tips and strategies they can use to write a really killer sales letter on their own. And then on the other hand, I also want to talk a little bit about for those people who have more money than time, I wanted to make sure I didn't confuse that. People who have more money than time, I wanted to try and gear the interview towards them as well, so that we can talk a little bit about what they can expect from a copywriter when they outsource copywriting work, and you know, what they should look for, what types of actions they can take when they say they get back some copy they don't like, or you know, how to work with a professional copywriter for those who are willing to outsource the work and pay for it but haven't, you know, done that before in the past. So I guess we should just kind of start off a little bit about some pros and cons of writing your own copy versus outsourcing your work, to try and help people get an idea of which, you know, which method pertains best to them.
Sure, absolutely. You know, here's the thing. Learning about copywriting is something that everybody should do regardless. And the reason is, when you outsource copy, and you know, a lot of the top marketers that I've written copy for, they are great copywriters in their own right. Frank Kern is a fabulous copywriter. John Reese is a phenomenal copywriter. The reason why I wrote their copy is because they were too busy marketing. They're too busy working on their own products. But here's the thing, is that they've helped me. They've provided me with a lot of feedback and suggestions and angles, and also information about their markets, which is crucial in copywriting. And so it really allowed me to do very well with my copy, not just because I'm a great copywriter. I don't consider myself a great copywriter. I consider myself a great student of copywriting, and we should all be. So the beauty about learning about copywriting is that whether you decide to actually do the copy yourself or to outsource it, you know your product better than anybody else out there. So you are in a position to either do the best type of copy possible, or when you outsource it, to see exactly what's going to work really well with your market. Now, the con to that is, when you try to do all the copy yourself, of course, that's going to tie up your time. It's going to tie up the fact that you're going to be working on your product. You know, there's product development, there's researching your market, there's creating the website, there's doing all the marketing to drive traffic to that website. So it's really time intense. Now, that being said, there's another con. The con is this, is that sometimes we when I say we know our markets better than anybody else, that's true. But sometimes we know too well. And what I mean by that is that we are so married to our markets, we're so married to specifically our products, that we fail to see the bigger picture. And sometimes hiring a copywriter is like having a third party's perspective. You know, one of the things that I do as a copywriter is I write copy, but I also critique copy, meaning I review and I give suggestions on copy. And I can tell you that there's a lot of copy out there that I've critiqued that are phenomenal. It's a great piece of copy, but there's slightly tiny little things that were causing either bottlenecks or causing conversions to go down because the marketer in question, who is also a great copywriter, failed to see. And so having a third party is like having a fresh pair of eyes that can help you to pinpoint blind spots. It can help you to provide you with new suggestions and new ideas to try and test and tweak with and write copy on. So those are the pros and cons. But the bottom line is to learn copy, to do it for your own benefit, because it's going to serve you well whether you write copy yourself or not. Because whenever you outsource, you're going to see, you're going to help your copywriter, first of all, but you're going to see also what will be great copy or not. You'll be able to outsource better. You'll be able to also have copy that's given to you by somebody else and then work on it yourself, knowing full well what will work well for your market because you know copywriting. So that's my answer. Sylvie, did you want to add anything to that?
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. I can remember back when I developed my very first product, and I wrote the copy myself, and I did it by paying attention to great sales letters. Of course, at the time, I had no clue that the sales letters I was modeling after were written by you. I didn't know that at the time. I had no idea who my client's copywriter was. This was before we met and before you became my client and all of this. But I had modeled my sales letter after your copy. And as I wrote up my sales letter, it took me weeks. I can't even begin to tell you how much time it takes when you aren't a copywriter. But I wrote my own copy. And then later, after Michael and I met and we started dating and all of this, he saw me fiddling with my copy, and he could not resist. He had to grab the mouse out of my hands and say, okay, let me play. And that's exactly what he did. And he spent 3 hours remodeling the headline and the deck copy, the first copy that showed up. And within a few days, my sales tripled just because a great copywriter came in and tweaked it. Now, this is kind of interesting because my sales letter had already been up for 2 years, and I thought it was doing pretty well. And all of a sudden, with a few slight changes, this happened. So my personal advice from the perspective of a non-copywriter is that if you absolutely have no budget to hire a copywriter to do your copy from scratch, pay attention to the great sales letters that are out there. Do not copy and paste. I can't stress that enough. Model your sales letter after those that are proving to work and those that you see have a good fit with your audience. And write it yourself, but modeled after the great ones. And once you have done that, bring it to an expert copywriter for a quick critique or a review, even a slight rewrite. If all you can afford is a grand, then bring it to them. And I'll give you a little hidden tip of if you have absolutely zero to spend. There are lots of copywriters forums where the greats hang out and talk about copy. And there are a lot of up-and-coming copywriters that hang out in these forums as well, looking for opportunities to critique existing copy. Take your copy and post it for them and ask for critique. You never know what kind of jewel you're going to find within your own copy.
That's a great, great tip. Could you? I know Michael has a copywriters board. Could you give us the URL for those who are interested in actually, you know, going on there and just chit-chatting with other copywriters?
Sure. You got to write this down because it's extremely difficult to remember. It's copywritersboard.com.
Okay. I'm going to definitely make note of that one. Now, say you have decided, you know, that you definitely want to write your own sales letter. When you're first getting started with a sales page, after you've already kind of taken a peek at, you know, some of the great examples of sales copy in action, you know, you got a good idea of which one you want to model your own sales page after. How do you start organizing your approach just to make sure that you're, you know, effective? And for example, do you break it down into elements, or do you focus on the headlines first and the subheadlines and then kind of fill in the gaps in between? Or I'm just curious to know what is your game plan when you're starting a letter from scratch as to how you're going to attack it.
There are three main things that we need to consider here because, first of all, I write copy for a living, so for me it comes in naturally, and it's something that's almost second nature to me. But for a lot of people who are especially learning to write copy or doing it themselves, it might be a little bit harder. So here's what I do. The first thing is the one thing that you need to do first and foremost, and it's the one thing that can actually help you not only in your copy, but in everything you do. Because once you do this, I can almost say this with certainty because it actually happened. It happened with my coaching students, it happened with some of my clients, and it happened with me, is when you research your market. The more you research your market, the more you know about your market, the more you find out about how to connect with your market, the more you'll actually get not only a great understanding of what they see, how they feel, what problems they're suffering, what's keeping them up at night, and so on and so forth, and then you'll write copy that will sort of match and connect with them. But at the same time, everything else flows from that. I mean, you're going to create a better product. You're going to create a better website. You're going to know what kind of copy to use to match that market. not only just the words, but the type of copy. And you also know where they hang out. You'll know what kind of marketing strategies will best be used to attract that market to your website and convert at a much, much, much higher rate than just a standard typical website with copy on it trying to hope for the best. The second thing, I'm a big fan of mnemonics. I used to teach at a local college here in Ottawa, Canada, at Algonquin College. I used to teach professional selling and marketing. And one of the things I teach my students is the use of acronyms, because acronyms helps to remember things. They're mnemonics. They help to remember things. And one of the mnemonics that I use is called my Quest Formula. And Quest is Q-U-E-S-T. It's like thinking about going on a quest when people read your copy. And I use these. I don't necessarily follow these exactly to the letter, no pun intended. But at the same time, I use the Quest formula as a guide. And these are like guideposts. And very often what I do is when I start writing copy, when I sit down to write copy, I think about these elements, every step of the Quest formula, and I expand on the copy. I write copy, and I wrap it around that element. Now, let me just give you what it is in a very quick nutshell format. Quest stands for qualify, understand, educate, stimulate, and transition. Now, here's what it means. Q, qualify. The first thing that you absolutely need to do in any piece of copy is to qualify the reader. The reader must know not only that this particular copy is perfect for them, but at the same time that if they feel that there is a problem that you are going to be solving for them, or that there's a solution further down in the copy, they're going to be pulled much, much deeper into your copy. But at the same time, they'll be much more qualified for whatever it is you're offering, so that they'll be much more inclined to buy your offer when they come to the closing part of your sales letter. Now, that's Q, qualify. And qualify doesn't necessarily mean just, you know, telling people exactly who your copy is for. It can be implied. It can be told in stories. It can be, you know, you can use that in your deck copy. It can be in your headline. And your headline doesn't need to be totally the qualifier. It could be your pre-headline. You know, some people will outright say, attention marketers and webmasters, and then they put the headline. That's just directly stated qualification. You don't have to necessarily do that. You can imply that. You know, if you're struggling with your sales letter and you want to increase your conversions, then this letter is for you. You know, that's also sort of a direct. But you can also tell a story that implies, maybe a story of how you came across this particular product, or how you decided to create the product because you suffered the exact same problems that your market did. Now, you means understand, and that's the part where you empathize with your market. This is where you talk about their problems. This is where you also can try to create what Dan Kennedy calls problem, agitate, solve, where you bring the problem to the forefront of their minds and you agitate the problem, meaning you make it bigger, you blow it up, you make it more urgent, you sort of twist the knife in, so to speak. And then when you come to the solve, which is your solution, there, you know, your solution will be like a glass of water in the middle of the desert. Now, that's you. That's empathy. That's telling stories or talking about how why should people listen to you? You know, why are you the person that they should listen to and read about and want to know more about? Or why are you the person that has the solution for what they, you know, are suffering? The E is educate. This is where you introduce your solution. This is where you talk about your product or your service or your offer. And this is where you talk about the features and even the benefits. And, of course, there's a big difference between features and benefits. Features is what a product has, and benefits is what it does. I like to add another step to that. I say that benefits are also what they mean to the reader, and not just what they do. Now, that being said, the next step is stimulate. And this is where you slowly start to take them through the offer process. What do you need to do to get those people to feel that they need your solution? After you've educated them on your solution, why should they buy your solution? Why should they buy it now? Why should they believe you? You know, this is where you talk about testimonials, or where you offer proof, where you talk about your guarantees, where you start building value and explaining the value behind the product and explaining why the price is so incredibly small compared to maybe the ultimate cost of not buying your product. And of course, transition is the final step, and that's transitioning your browser into a buyer, your prospect into a client. People will call it the close. I use T for transition, not just because I'm trying to be politically correct, but it's because it fit very well in my acronym called QUEST. But that's the QUEST formula. And those are guideposts that I use when I write copy. I sort of focus when I write my copy on the steps that I go through as people read the copy. Remember, it's like a grease slide going from the headline to the order form. And that's the QUEST formula, and that's something that I highly recommend. And the third thing is try to list. I'm a big fan of lists. I'm a big fan of bullets, but no, I'm not talking about just bullets and sales copy. I'm talking about creating lists. Lists of maybe, and this is all pertaining to the very first step of these three steps I'm talking about, researching your market. A list of maybe the six most commonly asked questions that people have. Maybe the six most common questions that people have about your product. Maybe the six most common objections that people would have about your product. What are the six most prominent features of your product? What are the six most important benefits of those features? I use the rule of six just because it's a number that stick with me, and you can expand on that, but this is going to help you to dig a little deeper. This is going to help you to make these lists so that when you start writing your copy, you can easily talk about the six biggest questions, the six biggest objections, and the six best ways to handle those objections, the six best features, and those six benefits, and so on and so forth. So those are the three steps on how I would recommend people to follow when they write copy.
Okay. Now, you mentioned step one of your three-step process would be to research your market and to identify problems. I was hoping maybe we could delve into that just for a brief second. I wanted to ask Sylvie, I know with Workaholics for Hire you did a lot of work similar to this. Can you give any suggestions or recommendations on how we can go about researching our market and getting to know them a little bit better, just for purposes of writing our sales copy?
Absolutely. It is the most critical step, and sadly, it is the step that most marketers completely ignore. Take it from the perspective of how to understand your market when you're writing your copy. When you've reached the stage where you're about to write the copy, it usually means that you've already done the product selection process. In other words, your product is already developed. Understanding your market should have come before that, because of the fact that if you understand your market, their problems, their fears, their biggest heartaches, the things that are going to appeal to them most about your product, if you understand that, you will be cognizant of that throughout the whole product creation process, and you won't miss anything that they're looking for. You'll fill those gaps in the marketplace where nobody is answering those needs if you're thinking about your customer first. A lot of people approach copywriting and product development and setting up websites and doing their marketing from the wrong perspective. They approach it from their own perspective. For example, if you're about to sit down and write copy and all you can see is a blank screen, I guarantee you it is because you have no clue, really, who your market is. I'll give you an example of that in a very specific example. Let's say that you have a weight loss product. The first thing you need to understand is the individual who is most likely going to be helped by your product. So it starts by the simple basics. What is the primary demographic of that market? It sounds simplistic, but the first thing you should know is what is the gender and age of your market. When you have those two pieces of information, and we'll apply it to the weight loss market, if you have those two pieces of information, you can start to deduce certain truths about your market, and it will help you understand them better when it comes to writing your copy or developing your product itself, and when it comes to finding them in the marketplace. The example I'm going to give is of a 42-year-old woman. Now, you know that the average age is 42 and your primary market is female. So knowing that, you're going to stop thinking about your market as an anonymous mass of numbers. And that's, I think, the biggest problem people make is they think of their market as how many clicks, how many views, how many in their pay-per-click campaign, how many clicks they're at, what's the conversion rate. It's all numbers. But in reality, your market is a person. It's an individual with thoughts, feelings, emotions. And you need to have a visceral understanding of who that person is so that you can respond to their needs, both in the product and in the copy. It's going to match. So if you know that she's a 42-year-old woman, the first thing you need to do is give her an actual name. Let's say it's Joanne that you choose. Joanne is 42. She's overweight. She's frustrated about not being able to lose weight. You know from her demographics that her household income runs about $120,000 a year. She works full-time. She's married. She has two kids. What do you know already about Joanne that you can start to apply to your copy? Well, you know that she probably doesn't have a lot of time on her hands. If she's got kids and she's working full time, when she gets home from work, she's tired. And the last thing she wants to do is have to sort through a complicated cookbook creating meals that nobody wants to eat because it's rice cakes again, Mom. You start to think of Joanne differently. You start to recognize that maybe she doesn't like eating different foods than everybody else eats. She wants to lose weight, but man, she really wants to enjoy spaghetti like everybody else. So you start to plan for that, and you're not going to create a product that isn't going to answer Joanne's needs. You're not going to create a product that insists she eats nothing but rice cakes for 3 weeks. Okay, she'll lose weight, but is she really going to stick to that? And you start to feel what Joanne feels. All your copy is going to be based on her, and it's going to appeal to her. So as you examine your own product, you're going to find flaws. If your product has already been developed without your market in mind, you're going to notice gaping holes in your product that you didn't think of. You didn't think about the time, convenience, all of these elements. Knowing your market's age also helps you understand if your market is a technophile or a technophobe. If your market is a technophobe, the last thing you want to do is create a complicated web page with a hidden order button or something that requires this individual to work really hard. Maybe what you're going to want to plan for is rather than scare them by the only way that they can make a payment is to enter their credit card information, maybe technophobes are terrified of putting their credit card online. So maybe you need a 1-800 number for them to call in their order. These are the things that will help you in deciding what's involved in your copy. It'll help you understand the story to tell and the perspective to take. All of your benefits are going to be focused on saving Joanne time and money and making her feel less like she has to eat different stuff than everybody else, and oh no, Mom's on another diet again. All of these things will come into play if you know your market better.
And it also ties in with the copy because now you know how to write the copy. In fact, let's say you're an affiliate and you find a product that, I don't know, it probably matches your market or it probably fits in well with your market, but let's say it doesn't do that 100%. Well, you can fill in the gaps with the sales copy. You can explain to your market. You can actually talk about even maybe a little bit of the negative stuff, like saying to your market the pros and cons of this particular product, but then focusing on the positive or turning the negative into a positive and saying, here's why you still will really need this product, or here's why this product is perfect for you. But at the same time, when you do your research and before you hit your sales copy, you'll be able to actually, you know, do some changes maybe to your product so that it fits your market, so that when you write your copy, it'll be perfect. One of the most famous copywriters out there, his name is Eugene Schwartz. And Eugene Schwartz, who has a course out there called Breakthrough Advertising, and it's a course that I highly recommend any aspiring copywriter or business owner to buy in and read. He had a history of actually taking some of the products, and most of them were information products, from his clients, and he had to write the copy for them. And then what he did is he went back out there to do some more research to find out more things about the market, and then he realized that there were gaps in the product. And in fact, he wrote the copy with those gaps. In fact, he wrote the copy that it insinuated that the product did have those things, and then he would bring the product back to the creator and say, you need to add those things because this is what's going to help you sell your product even more. And that's the point that Sylvia was trying to make, is that by doing research, by understanding your market more, everything flows so well. I mean, once you do that, and it is exactly what Sylvie said, it is a step that a lot of people miss. In fact, when Sylvie and I do a lot of work, when I write a lot of copy, or when Sylvie does a lot of the marketing work, especially marketing campaigns, for example, after the fact, we deal with a lot of people who, they skip that element. I mean, we're in the business of creating, but we're also in the business of fixing, it seems to be. We seem to be fixers, because a lot of people will try to create a product, they'll try to, you know, launch the product, and it's not selling. So now they're coming to us and say, what am I doing wrong, or how can we fix this? So we're in the market of selling, of fixing a lot. And what we realize is that people just simply didn't do their research properly. And one final thought. The more you research your market, the more you can practically have them write the copy for you. You know, one of the things and one of the tips I teach my students when they learn copywriting is if your product is already in existence, or if you can get your hands on people who have consumed a similar product, go out there and interview them and get their permission to use their content. And I'm not talking about testimonials. I'm talking about going out there, picking up the phone, there's conference lines out there, or just record the call, whatever the case is, and get it transcribed. The point is get their passions out. Get their enthusiasm about the product out. Let them talk about how great the product is. Let them enthusiastically talk about how it changed their lives. Let them sell you on the product that you're writing copy for. And guess what? When you poke and prod them just a little bit and let the passions come out and the emotions come out, when you get that call transcribed, you're going to have a good chunk of your copy already written for you. And the best part of all is that your copy will be written for your market with their needs and wants and desires and goals and budgets in mind.
Wow, that's another excellent tip. I know I keep kind of flogging a dead horse here talking about research, but Sylvie, I loved some of your tips you gave about researching your demographics. Do you know of any resources off the top of your head that we might be able to take a peek at if we're not sure where to start our research?
Absolutely. There was a long time ago, it used to cost a lot of money to do viability research because companies would literally spend millions in the viability stage trying to figure out who their market was and what they wanted and all of this long before the product actually reached the blueprint stage. And it would cost a lot of money because you'd have to hire focus groups and do all of the mass surveys and that sort of thing. Well, let me tell you, thank goodness for the internet, because it's allowed us to have tools at our disposal that give us that information very, very quickly. I'm going to tell you about a tool. Write this down. It's quantcast.com, quantcast.com. And this site, completely free, allows you to get a peek into your market's demographic. It used to be that in order to know your market's demographic, you had to have an already established website that, with special tracking that would allow people to enter their age and their, all of this information. You'd have to basically survey your market. And now, with the advent of amazing technology, we're able to take a peek into our competitors' existing demographic. For example, if you're approaching the weight loss market, all you need to do is think about what are the top websites for weight loss. Enter those websites into the QuantCast tool, and it will give you a really good idea of what the demographic is for your competitor's website. You'll know in advance the age, the gender, the marital status, whether or not there's children, education level, income level, et cetera, et cetera. You'll find that at QuantCast, but it does even more. It gives you a snapshot of what other sites your market tends to frequent. Now, I'm not going to get into a dissertation of how to get all this information. It really is an amazing tool that keeps track of this data for over, 20 million websites. And the best part is those websites don't even have to have their code on them. It's tracked using advertiser statistics and that sort of thing. But the bottom line is this. You can conceptualize who are my top competitors and figure out what their demographics are, and you'll know in advance how to approach your own market.
More excellent advice. Now, if anyone didn't catch that URL or didn't have a chance to write it down, the URL Sylvie mentioned is quantcast.com, quantcast.com. We talked a lot about the approach to your sales page now. We've covered, you know, the three things that Michael recommends. We went over Michael's Quest acronym he uses to qualify, understand, educate, stimulate, and transition throughout his sales page. Now, I wanted to talk about once it comes time to put pen to paper or, I guess, fingers to the keyboard for our purposes and talk a little bit about execution. Since we've covered the approach, I think it's time to kind of move into the execution stage where we're ready to start writing. What are some of the mandatory elements every sales page needs to have included?
Well, I can talk a lot about the different elements that go into copy, and I think that if you are a student of copywriting, if you follow the steps that we've talked about at the beginning of this call, is that you're going to have a great understanding of what a sales letter should have or any kind of copy should have. You've got your typical headline, your deck copy, which is the copy right underneath the headline, which is not necessarily mandatory, but it's very useful because it gives people a snapshot of what the page is all about and can actually be used to pull people in. Remember, a headline's job is not to sell people on the product. It's not there to also give an entire, you know, two or three paragraphs that summarizes the whole thing. A headline has only one purpose, to get people to start reading the next paragraph. That's it. That's it. That's all. And that's what a sales letter is. It's like a grease slide. It goes from paragraph to paragraph to paragraph. Now, so you've got the copy. You've got the what we call the lead copy, the intro copy, the very first few paragraphs that start it all off. And then after that, you've got, like I said, you can implement the Quest formula. But when you talk about, for example, putting pen to paper, very often the easiest part to start with is to just start writing bullets, talking about all the features and then talking about all the benefits that those features translate into. And once you'll write all those bullets, then you can sort of wrap copy around that. You can start with your lead copy that will gently go into bullets. But again, we're talking about elements here, so let me just stick with the elements. So you got your bullets, you've got features and benefits. You've got, of course, some of the most common questions that people have and how you answer them. Some of the most common objections that people will have about your product or service and how you'd answer them. And then you have, of course, testimonials, guarantees, and probably one of the most important elements of all copy that you absolutely need, and it's probably the most important one because it's the one that people overlook the most, is proof. Proof, proof, proof. And I'm not just talking about proof elements in themselves. I'm not talking about just like, for example, if you're selling a course on how to make money, that you include snapshots of your bank account or something like that. Proof element can be a lot more. Anything that helps to create, increase, instill credibility in your offer. Because the more, people, I believe this to be true, that especially on the internet, when people hit your website, they hit your website. You're not using junk mail here. You're not trying to send out mail willy-nilly and then try to get people's attention and see if they're actually interested in the offer or not. When they hit your website, they're already interested. Why? Because the internet is really in existence for one thing and one thing only. Not for people to shop, but for people to look for information. That's what the internet is. So when they hit your website, they're in the market already, at least to some degree. So your job is not really to make a sale. Your job is to prove enough your case so that you prevent them from procrastinating. And I think that's truly the fundamental purpose of great copy. It's not to make a sale. It is to prevent from procrastinating. Why? Because the first thing that people will have in their minds is they're looking for information. And the second thing is not to buy. And let me backtrack. There are three fundamental human nature type of laws that I like to focus on when you write copy. When you know about these three fundamental laws, Then you can come back to your copy and easily focus on those elements that will fit in those things. Those are the three laws. Here they are. People never read anything at first. They never do. People never believe anything at first. And finally, people never do anything at first. So your job when you write your copy is to focus on what I call the three P's. The three P's will help you fight those three human nature, those three human immutable laws, I guess, if you want to call them that. Pull them in, prove your case, push them to act. Pull them in, again, when you write your headline and the kind of copy you use, the words you use, and there's other elements that you can add to a website, to your sales page, that will help to grab people's attention and to drive them into your sales copy. So you need to pull them in. And you know what? A lot of people, what they do too when they hit a website is they skim, scan, and scroll. I mean, how many times you will hit a website that has a long sales letter? You're not going to read the whole thing. You're going to scan up and down to see if it's worth reading in the first place. So you need to pull them in. The next is to prove your case. Because here's the thing. People will fundamentally distrust you. They will fundamentally think, they don't know you from a hole in the ground. So they will need to have something that tells them, not only is this product perfect for them, but is this product for real? Is this truly something that's going to work for me? Is this not a scam, so to speak, you know? Because people fear making the bad decisions. The fear of loss is greater than the gain of pleasure. And so that's one thing you need to do, is to add as much proof as possible. And the third thing is to push them to act, call to action, making it easy, as Sylvie just mentioned. Now, coming back to what I was saying in terms of elements, all the elements that you need to add in terms of how to prove your case can also include the guarantees, reversing the risk, testimonials. And that's the one thing that a lot of people also miss out and they skimp on, is testimonials. Now, I'm not talking about actual testimonials where people talk and glorify about you and your product and how great it is. I'm talking about actual results, case studies. Testimonials are actually best when they are transformed into case studies. And case studies are great when you actually do what we call a baseline and then they follow up. And what I mean by that is this. If somebody tells you, for example, Michael, I bought your product. That's fantastic. It helped me to make $3,000 in the first week. Now, that's great. There's an actual result in that testimonial. But what I want to do is probably talk about where that person was before. I mean, if that person was a millionaire, $3,000 is a drop in the bucket. And again, people will probably read that testimonial and they'll be somewhat persuaded by it. But if you provide more proof, and it's not necessarily more proof, extra elements of proof, it could also explaining the situation, turning a testimonial into a case study so that people understand the gravity or the seriousness of that proof or the true nature of that proof. You can say, you know, when Michael came to me and bought my product, he was broke. In fact, he invested already $20,000 in other courses, and he's been doing this for 2 years, and he barely made a dime in this business. But when he bought my product, here's what he had to say, and then you provide his testimonial. How much more compelling is that testimonial now? And that's the point, is that, you know, things have to be, I think, all copy, whether it's a testimonial, whether it's a claim, a promise, whether it's a benefit, are much more powerful when they focus on either one and better two of three elements. They have to be quantifiable, they have to be measurable, and they have to be time-bound. In a nutshell, quantifiable, of course, is to be specific. Measurable is to have a baseline against which that's measured on. Like I said, making $3,000 in 1 week may be fascinating and it may be incredible, but if that person's a millionaire, who cares? But if you say that person was broke, if you provide a baseline against which that result was achieved, now that result is far more credible. It's far more important in terms of proof. And of course, time bound is the time frame. When you say I made $3,000, and if you only say, hey, I made $3,000, that person may have taken 3 years to achieve that. So when you say I made $3,000 in my first week, that's much more powerful. So quantifiable, measurable, and time bound. Now, to finish up on the elements of a sales letter, of course, you've got your what I call the value buildup. And the value buildup is after you provide all your proof, you're about to provide them with the price. And the whole point about giving a price is to not only get people to understand how much your product's going to cost, and that's standard in any piece of copy, what you need to make sure is to get people to understand the value of what they're getting into. And oftentimes, one of the best ways to do that is to do what Dan Kennedy calls the apples to oranges comparison. Don't compare the price of your product against a competing product, because that's apples to apples. Who cares? And you might want to do that if the major benefit, the major hook, the major angle that your product has is a price benefit, that's fine. But what I'm talking about here is value. And the value buildup, what you do is you compare the price of your product against the ultimate cost of going with either a competing product or the ultimate cost of not going ahead at all. I mean, if, for example, I say, my course is going to cost you $97. But if you say, if you didn't have this course, you would have to go through what I had to go through to learn what I learned to put in this $97 course. You would have to go through, you know, 8 years of internet marketing and 8 years of not making a lot of money. In fact, probably going broke several times. You'll have to go through 8 years of spending over $20,000 in other courses to finally find the nuggets that I found, that I distilled and put into this $97 course. Now, are you willing to wait 8 years and spend $20,000 to get the kind of secrets that you get in my $97 course, Mr. or Mrs. Prospect? See, that's the value buildup. You're comparing price, or I would prefer to say the investment in your product or service, against the ultimate cost of not getting it. And then finally, you close. This is where you make your offer, the offer itself, how people actually buy your product, what do they get when they buy your product, premiums like bonuses and so on and so forth, the actual call to action, telling them specifically, in no uncertain terms, how should they buy from you. Don't be shy. You know, a lot of people say, oh, it's intuitive. People will guess how they do it. They'll know how to click on the link. Well, guess what? We've done a lot of testing. And believe it or not, even in markets where we are dealing with engineers, for that matter, people who are highly intelligent or highly intellectual, we would change or test things in the copy where we actually take them by the hand and we, quote-unquote, dumb down the copy so that people will know exactly how to order from your product. It doubled, tripled, and quadrupled sales in many cases. People want to be told how to do things. People are desperate to be led, so to speak. So you need to tell them how to take action. How should they buy from you? And then, of course, the final thing is the PS at the end. And the PS at the end is just like an afterthought. And it should be used as a regular PS. I've seen some really badly done PSs out there. But a PS should be either an extra element that you didn't talk about in your copy, an afterthought, maybe an extra bonus you didn't mention, maybe repeating something that's important to make the sale. For example, the scarcity element. Why should they act now? What would happen if they procrastinate? Remember, the copy's job is not to induce a sale. It's to prevent procrastination. And if you write your copy with that in mind, you're going to write fabulous copy. So those are the elements in a nutshell.
It's more excellent advice. I was hoping maybe Sylvie, since you have like a non-copywriter's perspective, as you mentioned a few times, could you go over some of the big no-nos that just jump right off the page at you? I know Michael Price sees a lot of things that he doesn't like just because he's so used to critique and copy, and he knows it inside and out. But for someone such as yourself, who you know, I'm sure you've seen hundreds and maybe even thousands of sales letters, what are some of the big no-nos that the novices tend to violate?
The one big no-no I've seen over and over and over again is a focus on features rather than benefits. People very often don't understand the difference between the two. A feature is a feature of the product. And you can think of that in terms of software. If you have a piece of software and it has a list of features, things that it does, that is the feature side of things. And people do this with their own products. Benefits, on the other hand, is what Michael calls the so what. So what's the benefit to me if that feature is included? And that's what's so important, is to understand the difference. I see a lot of feature-heavy copy and not a lot of benefit heavy copy, and that's the important thing. It falls back to understanding your market. My product does this. Yeah, so how does that apply to me? And you need to answer that question.
I'm going to add to that because that's a great, great point. When you research your market enough to know what are some of the problems that you've uncovered that your market is undergoing, that they're suffering from, will enable you to write the benefits to those features in a way that matches your market best. I'll give you an example. Let's say you're selling some kind of cream that helps to reduce wrinkles. And one of the features is the fact that it's non-invasive, that it's not abrasive, that it's actually better than surgery. Let's say people who have facelifts or people who have things like chemical peels and all that. Now, that's the feature, and the benefit, of course, is the fact that they don't have to run the risk of having surgery. But that's just a benefit. I think a deeper benefit in that, and if you do your research right, if you find out what your market really wants, you might learn, for example, that your market is made up of not only women or women who are of a certain age or are concerned about their appearance, but maybe also women that are really concerned about their appearance to the point where they feel embarrassed by being in a waiting room, waiting for the doctor, possibly with bandages on, possibly also having everybody look at them and why she's doing all this. So, you know, one of the benefits you might say is, you know, this cream will help to reduce your wrinkles, and it's done in a non-abrasive, non-surgical way, and it's less riskier than having surgery, so that you don't have to wait and being, you know, put to the in front of the eyes of a whole bunch of people looking at you and staring at you in the waiting room of a doctor's office. That's a much more powerful benefit. And again, it comes back down to what Sylvie said, which is dead on. It's about knowing your market.
Absolutely, and I'd like to add a second one, if I could. A huge, huge mistake, and I see this over and over and over again with many, many clients, is that when they're writing their own copy, they're not writing with any gumption. There's no true call to action. There's no consistency. It's almost like people are terrified of asking for money. And, you know, the worst salesmen in the world are those who never ask the customer to buy. And your sales letter acts as your salesperson. And you need to not be shy. You need to actually ask and give them the opportunity to buy. Many, many people will bury it somewhere near the bottom, this tiny little, and then followed by, but if you're not ready to buy, then click here to bookmark it, or maybe join my newsletter, or maybe, and the fear shows. And the prospect often asks the question, well, if he isn't confident about his product, why should I be? So that's an integral thing. Don't be shy about asking for the sale.
Now, I want to switch gears on you here a little bit. We talked a lot about, you know, the approach and the some of the elements you have to have when you're getting ready to execute your sales page. I want to talk a little bit about, like, the style or the voice in a sales letter, which is something that I think a lot of novice copywriters probably kind of overlook. How do you try and, I guess, choose which type of style or voice you want to use on a sales page in relationship to the product itself and the market?
Ooh, could I answer this one?
Mm-hmm.
The best style and the best voice is the one that your market will resonate with.
I was going to say that.
That's the one. It isn't about you. Again, it falls to the market. I hate to beat that dead horse, but let me tell you, it is the biggest component that people ignore. If you know your market, your question will have been answered because the voice and the style will be exactly mimicked to the market. Your market's individual characteristics, her fears or his fears, the uncertainties, the problems, all of these things, the story that you write, the characteristic you take on, it will be very much like role playing. When you know your market, you will actually think like your market, and your voice will come out as a perfect match. Think of you as the copywriter as being your market's best friend sitting across the table having coffee together and having a conversation. Think about it like that, and it'll change everything you do.
I'm going to add one thing to that. We talked a little bit about the voice. In terms of style, you know, one of the most commonly asked questions I get all the time, long copy or short copy? And the answer to that is exactly what Sylvie said, but I'm going to go a little deeper and give you a bit of a practical tip on that. The length of the copy, of course, is absolutely determined by your market. When you do your market research, when you learn more about your market, the more you're going to automatically know in advance what will be best used for them, what will sell the best with them, and what will connect best with them. You'll know what style, what voice, and so on. But here's a little acronym that I use. Again, I'm a big fan of acronyms. Because when you find out more about your market, you'll learn at what stage of awareness they are at in terms of the problem, the urgency of the problem, your solution, the availability of solutions in general, and your solution specifically. And here's what I mean by that. This is an acronym that I use often. It's called OATH. Are your prospects ready to take an oath? And it means O-A-T-H. Are they oblivious? Are they apathetic? Are they thinking? Or are they hurting? And what it means is this. First of all, oblivious. They're totally oblivious. They're oblivious about the problem. They don't even know that they're suffering from a specific problem. And therefore, let's say you're selling a product where you absolutely need to educate them on the fact that they do have a problem in the first place before you sell them anything. It's going to be key, and therefore you're going to need a lot more copy to do that. You're going to need to pre-sell them. You're going to need to use a lot more copy to educate them on the fact that they do have a problem in the first place. The second is apathetic. Maybe your market is aware that they have a problem, but they just don't care. It's not big enough. It's not urgent enough. It's not important enough. So now you're probably going to need a little less copy than the first one, but you're still going to need enough to bring that problem to the forefront, to make it more urgent, to make it more visceral, to make it more present and vivid. And the next step is they're thinking. So they know they have a problem. They know that they need to do something about their problem, so they're not apathetic. But they're thinking about doing something, and they're looking at different options. They're looking at different solutions. Either some of your competing solutions, other products out there or services out there that are exactly the same as yours, and indirect competitors, maybe solutions out there that give the exact same results but, you know, that are different. So what you need to do is to talk about the solutions. You need to educate them on the solutions. You need to educate them on why it's important to have the solutions. And now hurting, the last one, is that they're desperate. They know they have a problem. They know that the problem's important. They know that there are solutions out there, and now they're desperate to do something about it. They need a solution now. And you can probably imagine that in those particular cases, you're not going to need a lot of copy. If you're hitting a market that you've researched and you found out that they are hurting, you're not going to have to sell them as much as you would for somebody who's oblivious, for example. So that's great, but now you need to sell them on what your solution is and why your solution is better and why they need to buy your solution now. Again, about preventing procrastination. So here's where you focus on maybe the scarcity elements, why it's important for them. Maybe you have an offer that's time sensitive or quantity bound. Maybe you have a product that's priced in a certain way that's competitively done. Or maybe if they're hurting right now, you can talk about how great it feels to have that problem soothed and all about the benefits of not having that problem in their lives anymore and how it feels great not to be hurting anymore. So those are the elements, and that will determine a lot the style and the voice of your copy. And it will determine a lot more. The research element is so crucial because it does all that for you. And that's the key. I think if you research your market the most, you're going to automatically find out exactly what style, what voice, what length of copy you should use, and so on and so forth.
I've noticed a lot of sales pages that, like you said a while back, a lot of people come to a sales page and they'll just kind of like scan and click away or leave. But I've seen a lot of sales pages where, you know, I'm typically a scanner. I'll go, I'll read the headline, I'll get a gist of what they're talking about, I'll check out the graphics, I'll scroll top to bottom. And all of a sudden, I'll see a great, you know, little blurb of copy that sucks me right in. I'll catch myself reading the whole sales page when I'm, you know, really just putting something else off. And I get all the way to the bottom of the page, and I'm thinking about buying this new thing that I didn't even know about a few minutes earlier. And the copywriter who did this piece can't seem to close the deal. Do you have any tips for, you know, a rookie copywriter on how to master that crucial part of the page where, you know, you outright ask for the sale? And can you also maybe go over a few mistakes that a lot of people make when they're trying to close the deal?
Well, sure. And I have to say this. First of all, if you got sucked into the sales letter, and if you read the whole sales letter from top to bottom after you started scanning it, then you are, you know, you're targeted for that offer. You are in that particular market. You have gotten, the copy editor has done a good job in pulling you in. They may have done a good job in proving their case, but they haven't done a good job in pushing you to take action. Or maybe they've proven their case, but not enough so that when you come to the pushing you to take action, it's just not good enough. So the things that we need to understand is, first of all, oftentimes when this happens is that you knew enough about your market to pull them in, but you didn't know enough in order to get your offer right or your product right or enough of the proof right. So this is where I often say, first of all, it might not necessarily be a case of copy. It could be a problem with the offer itself. And it could be something that Sylvie mentioned earlier about, you know, people wimping out on the copy and not asking for the order. It could be also a case of the fact that you didn't offer enough proof. You didn't answer all of the questions and all the objections that they had in their minds. Again, it comes back down to the process that you need to take when you write copy. And once you do that, once you write your copy, is to look at what are the bottlenecks. If people are scanning and they start reading your copy, let's say, for example, your headline did its good job, maybe you have subheads, you know, mini headlines to start the copy that grabs people's attention and forces them to start reading, that's great. You know, you can do a little bit of testing and tracking just to find out how long people are actually staying on your copy. You know, if people hit your copy and leave immediately right away, then you know that your headline didn't do a good job. It didn't pull people in. But if people are staying and they're still not ordering, then the snag is your offer. I mean, that's probably the second most important or biggest bottleneck that I've seen in sales copy, is that the offer didn't get them in. And the offer could be, you know, pricing, it could be payment plan, it could be different options on ordering, it could be the ordering process itself. Very often, the stumbling block could be the lack of proof or even the order form itself. It just causes people to get confused. It causes people to ask more questions than answers them. So the point is, I think if you want to look at it from the perspective of a copywriter, focus on the two things that you need to look at the most, the bottlenecks that are stopping people from going through the process of that grease slide, and then looking at elements that you could probably test. Sometimes they'll jump out at you. When you do your research, you'll know exactly what you can test and what you can write, first of all, write copy on and then test. But at the same time, you know, you have the ability to go out there, put your sales letter up, and see what kind of different headlines will pull people in, what kind of things that you can add to your sales copy that will get them to buy, to continue reading and buy, what kind of offers are going to help you sell more. You know, I think this is important. I don't want to do a whole discourse on testing. We're talking about copywriting on this call. And testing is, I think, a big part of it. And it's something that maybe a lot of marketers, and this is, you know, new, and sometimes it might be a little bit, or seems to be a little bit difficult for a lot of copywriters out there. And I don't want to say, hey, you should test. Of course you should test. But I think, you know, learning about copy and writing copy is more important. And once you do that, then you can start testing. But testing is really to find out what your market wants. And that is, again, part of the whole process of connecting with your market properly. When you test, you can try different things. You can try different offers, different prices, different bonuses and premiums, different guarantees. Will a 30-day guarantee sell more than a 60-day guarantee? Will a, you know, these testimonials placed here outsell these testimonials placed there? Whatever the case is, the fact is, you know, and I think this is the best way to answer this question, and Paul Meyer said it best, not me. He said, you know, when people ask him about testing, they say, Paul, isn't testing like you're trying to manipulate the market? And Paul answered it so beautifully. He said, no, testing is about trying to find out what your market really wants and giving it to them. And that's what you need to do. So, yeah, that's some of the biggest no-nos, is to not give what your market wants. And it comes back down, right back down to knowing about your market.
Excellent. Now, I want to kind of do like an about face on you, or maybe like a 180 degree turnaround here. What we've talked about up until this point has all kind of been geared for those who have more time than money and want to just kind of write their own copy. So we gave them some great tips. And I think everything we've talked about is actually going to end up being kind of a cornerstone for this next section I want to get into, because these are all things that were helpful to know, even for those who have they're on the opposite end of the spectrum and they have more money than time and they're willing to pay pay a higher ticket for a professional copywriter. So like I said, we're going to turn around here a little bit and talk about some tips for those who want to outsource. So some of our more experienced members of Pro From Go, the ones who have a few projects under their belt and you know, they want to focus on other things such as product development or the actual marketing, and they want to hire a copywriter, what are a few things that you can recommend for them to help them ensure a stress-free project?
Sylvie, did you have anything to say on that?
Well, I think the most important thing to understand is that, much like starting any business, outsourcing isn't an alien word. It doesn't mean anything different from hiring someone. And what I mean by that is this. If you're starting a business and you set it up and you know that you need 20 people working for you, one of which is a copywriter, you don't set up a location, set up 20 cubicles with no clue how to tell them to do their job or how you want them to do their job. You can hire an expert copywriter, but that copywriter needs direction from you. You're the master guide in your business. So the answer to this is the same as the answer to any outsourcing question. Know what you want. Understand enough about what you're asking so that you can direct the traffic, so that you can overlook the project and know that you're actually getting quality work done. I wouldn't dream of hiring somebody to do a task unless I'm able to blueprint that task for them. So I think the biggest concern that people have when they're outsourcing anything is, I know that I need this thing done, but I don't know whether I'm getting something good or not. So it comes from understanding copywriting, at least from a generic point of view. You need to understand the process conceptually so that you can see whether the result that you're getting or the deliverable that you get is good or lousy.
Do you have any insider tips as to how we can retain services from an expert copywriter at you know, the best available price? I know that sometimes their prices are set, but you know, even when they're set, is it a market where they might be negotiable, or is there anything you can do to, you know, retain a copywriter who might typically be unavailable to the, you know, the common marketer? And how can we get the, you know, the best price possible?
Well, my answer to that is very easy. You get what you pay for. You know, if you're going to want to get the best copy at the best possible price, and I think everybody wants the best product, the best value of whatever they're buying, of course, at the best possible price. But you have to remember that copywriting is an investment. Whether you choose to invest in it yourself with your own time, your own money, your own blood, sweat, and tears, or you invest in another copywriter to do that for you, I think we need to keep this in mind. You can hire a, quote-unquote, a cheap copywriter. There are tons of them out there. Some of them are cheap because they are incredibly valuable, and there are different reasons. And this is all coming back down to the power of copy. I think if they're great copywriters, they can sell you on the value of their copy. But if they are, let's say, a little bit more affordable, maybe they're just starting out, or maybe they're trying to build their portfolio, or maybe they're willing to barter, or maybe they're willing to do a copy for you in exchange for maybe promoting them to your JV partners, your affiliates, your list, whatever the case is. There are tons of ways to work around these things, but there are tons of marketers and copywriters out there who are really cheap, and I say cheap for cheap's sake. These kinds of people, and I have to you have to understand something. There is some copywriters out there. There are some copywriters out there who are incredible. They're fantastic. And they are incredibly cheap. They're just cheap, period. And I don't care what country they are in. I don't care what kind of networking website they use, whether it's Elance, Rent-A-Guru, whatever the case is. That's not the point. The problem is finding those people, those gems, is like finding a needle in a haystack. you have to ask yourself this. Am I willing to spend a lot of time and down the road a lot of money trying to find that gem and potentially running the risk of never finding them in the first place? Because, you know, what happens is whenever I have people coming to me to write their copy, the sad thing is that they've already gone through 2, 3, 4, 5 copywriters before they've actually landed, you know, on my lap. They've already hired really cheap copywriters out there that were cheap, and, of course, they've done cheap work. Some people out there were very lucky. They found that gem. They found that needle in the haystack. But, you know, some people will have that in mind. They'll say, oh, I know that there's somebody in some far-off country out there who, you know, the cost of living is such that they'll do anything for a few bucks, and they're fantastic copywriters. Well, trying to find that gem, you're going to spend a lot of time, you're going to spend a lot of money, and you're probably going to have, you're going to be disappointed many more times than not that, you know, until you find the one that is the gem, and you'll probably never find that gem in the first place. So your job, I think, would be best off is if you look for a great copywriter who is charging you fees that you can afford and that will make your ROI, your return on investment, realistically feasible. You know, it's nonsense to pay a copywriter $25,000 for a $9 ebook, understandably so. But I'm sure there are copywriters out there who are, you know, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, and, you know, realize that they may be charging $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, maybe even $10,000, but your product starts making $10,000 in sales a month, and you'll be able to recoup that money easily because you went to a great copywriter in the first place. But keep in mind, there are also copywriters out there who are willing to, like I said, barter. Some of them though are willing to work with you on a performance basis, where they ask for a little bit of money up front, and then they get a percentage of your sales. Now, finding those copywriters will be a lot less work than trying to find that gem, that needle in the haystack. But there are some out there, and if you really want to save a bit of money, do that. Now, here's the third step. I want to also emphasize, beyond all this, is to, you know, the importance of going to a great copywriter in the first place, period, should be your number one goal. But this is sort of like last-ditch solutions here. Here's another step, and this is something that I do as well. If you really, really want to save some money, you can write the copy yourself or have a, quote-unquote, cheap copywriter write it for you. But then you go to a top copywriter who is expensive and who has a track record, who has a great portfolio of great sales letters that are proven to sell. Then you can have them critique your copy for a fraction of the cost that it would cost you to have them write it from scratch. And then what you do, of course, throughout the whole process is learn. You know, you can learn what they tell you. You can learn what they say. You can learn how they work on your copy and all that stuff. So it's a great learning experience too. But the bottom line is you can have a copywriter, you know, charge you $5,000, $8,000, $10,000 for a sales letter, or you can have somebody else do it for $1,000 and then pay a pro copywriter $1,000, $2,000, or $3,000, depending on the length of the sales letter, to do a critique. So you're not spending $8,000 or $10,000, you might spend $2,000, $3,000, or $4,000. But, you know, it's better than nothing. And this is, like I said, a last-ditch effort. If you really can afford a top copywriter from the get-go, and if it's feasibly reasonable for you in terms of ROI, again, are you willing to pay, you know, several thousands of dollars for a sales letter that will produce that amount of money that will make your investment back? Yeah, great. But if it's not, I think you should look at other ways. But again, it comes back down to learning about copy yourself, because that's the best way to do it. And if you can't, and if you really need to outsource, there are these, like I said, last-ditch things that you can do in order to get a better deal, I guess, if you want to call it that. Sylvie, did you want to add anything to that?
I have a great thing to add to this, a way of telling, because I think a lot of people have trouble knowing good copywriters from bad. And if you're just price shopping, just that alone, that, well, this guy will write it for $1,000, but this other guy will cost $15. And if you have no point of reference between the two, you won't know if you're just going to be flushing your $1,000 down the toilet by getting a bad copywriter to do it, or if it's really worth the investment of $15. So I'm going to give you a little insider's understanding of how a copywriter works and how a copywriter thinks. I'm married to one, and I've seen something over the years that has fascinated me. I've talked to, and we're great friends with a lot of the Internet's top copywriters, and one thing is true. The longer a copywriter is a copywriter, and the more successful he is, the less likely he is to want to write other people's copy, and I'll tell you why. Copywriters clue in very early on that they may have gotten paid $10,000 to write copy, but the client they wrote it for made, well, $1 million in a day. And when you notice that, copywriters have a tendency to start to wonder why they're doing it for other people and why aren't they just doing it for themselves. They can make a lot more money with the same amount of effort. So here's something you can look for. If you come across a copywriter who's rather low-ended, find out from them how long they've been a copywriter. And ask one question. Have your fees increased over that time frame? If it has not, then that's your number one clue that that's a bad copywriter. Because a good copywriter will have gotten great feedback from clients telling them how much money they made. And they'll start to think about that and say, maybe I should increase my prices. My clients are making a fortune because of my blood, sweat, and tears. And that's one of the big clues. If you find a cheap copywriter, ask them how long they've been doing it and whether their rates have increased. That'll help you a lot in narrowing down who you should go with.
That's some more great insight as to how you can narrow down some of your potential copywriters. I want to just take a minute to thank you both again for coming and doing this interview with me. I think we had some really top-notch content that all the members of Pro From Go are really going to enjoy and benefit from. I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us about what some of your most recent projects are, what you're working on, and what some of our members may be interested in checking out.
Absolutely. The top number one project that has been the result of our experience in the market, we have been working since, 2 years ago on developing the ultimate all-in-one solution for internet marketers and for offline marketers. And what we've done is we've realized, and remember, we've talked about the steps in the process and that it starts with understanding your market. One thing we clued into a while back is that when it comes to having a successful project launch, it doesn't matter what type of project, it doesn't matter if you're selling affiliate products or you're developing your own products or you're doing joint ventures with other people, whether you're doing wholesale drop shipping, it really doesn't matter what your project is. It consists of four steps. You must complete all four steps in order to achieve success. And this applies to every success that has ever happened in the history of business has boiled down to the four steps. As it applies to the online market, the four steps are these. The first step is viability, understanding your market, who they are, what they want, and how they want it. Because once you understand that, you will know what type of product to focus your attention on. The product, or the sourcing, is step two. A lot of people move to the product step without completing the first, and that results in a lot of problems in the marketplace. The biggest complaints that people have about products that they've purchased is it wasn't right for them. And that falls to the marketer, the person who developed that product. It's their fault because they didn't understand the market and they didn't develop the product to match the market. Once you know what your product is and it perfectly matches your customer, the next step is your website or your delivery mechanism. It will not be in your best interest to start to think about what kind of website you need or what you want on it or whether you should worry about search engine optimization or do you need pop-ups or pop-overs or all of those different components in a website. You'll know the answer to that if you know your market. And then finally, the fourth step is marketing. That's like the dessert at the end of the meal. Driving traffic to your site starts from understanding your market, because once you know who they are, you will understand what types of traffic apply to you and where to find them, where they hang out, how they think, what they're doing. those four steps cover every type of business there is. And what we've done is condensed those four steps and applied it to everyone's online marketing efforts. So we've developed a system that creates that simple step-by-step formula that you can use in your business to see success with everything you do.
Michael, could you tell us a little bit about your contributions to Success Chef and how it's benefited you?
Well, the thing is that Sylvie hit the nail on the head. Success Chef was really born out of a very personal challenge and need. And let me just tell you a little bit about the story behind Success Chef. The fact is, we had a lot of clients coming to us in the past. And again, remember I said at the beginning of the call that we are not just creators for our clients. We are also fixers. We tend to fix a lot of the bobos. You know, we tend to work with clients who have either have bad copy, or they have a bad product, or they have a bad sales process, and they come to us and say, you know, can you help me fix this or that? How can I throw more money at this? And then we realized that a lot of them just didn't do it right. They didn't follow the process. They didn't follow the four steps. And it came to us, you know, over and over again that these marketers were just not doing it right. And if they just knew how to do it right, how easy it would be for us. And not only easy for us, but easy for them. In fact, they don't necessarily have to come to us. I'm not saying that we don't want their business, although I can tell you right now that we're putting a lot more effort and emphasis in our training system than we are providing services. But the fact is, we wanted to help people out. We wanted to help people understand it's not about trying to fix things. It's about an understanding why you needed to have them fixed in the first place, because they come to us without knowing what exactly is going on, what's wrong, why are they not selling, you know, why is their product not selling, whatever the case is. Now, the personal challenge that I was talking about earlier is this. We're service providers, and we also have a lot of staff who will deal with our clients and trying to pinpoint those snags, those bottlenecks, those problems that we can now work with them in a better way, or tell them what they can do so that they can better their business or their business model. And what happened was Sylvie, a couple of years ago, was diagnosed with breast cancer. And we were forced to take several months off to deal with this dreadful disease. Sylvie had a mastectomy, which is a surgical removal of her breast. She had, you know, several months of chemotherapy, followed by several months of radiation treatments, and then followed after that by hormone treatments, which she is still on. Now, Sylvie is 100% remission, and thank goodness she's going to be in my life for a long, 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 long time. And she'll be definitely there for all of our clients for a long, long time. But the fact is, when we were taking all this time off, we realized how important it was to have something that works, you know, that something that not only makes us money, and I'm not just talking about from a passive revenue model or passive income. I'm talking about the importance of having done things right in the right way and knowing why they work in the right way. And then we realized that also a lot of the clients that would have or need help, have problems with, that they need help with, that if they have gone through that process, not only would they, you know, I wouldn't say that they would need us less, but they would be far more productive, they would be far more richer and wealthier, they would be much more successful, and they will also have, you know, the ability to take some time off like them to deal with, I hope this challenge never occurs and happens to anybody, God forbid. But if they want to take time off to go on a vacation, to enjoy a bigger bank account that they will be able to pay all their debts off with, maybe to replace their income to the point where they can quit the rat race, quit their jobs, and finally do what they want, maybe the ability to have more time on their hands to spend with their families. You know, people, your families and friends are the most important people in your lives. And we definitely have known this, especially in the last couple of years, dealing with this personal challenge. So this is what happened, is that Success Chef was really born out of not just a need in the marketplace, but also our own personal challenge, realizing how important it is to know why you need to do certain things and why you need to do them the right way. It's just like following a recipe. You need the right ingredients, and you need to use them in the right order, because if you don't, if you fail to use the right ingredients, or if you fail to use the right ingredients in the right order, you're going to end up with really bad food, just as much as you're going to end up with a business that's not going to do you any good. So that's the birth of Success Chef, and that's the reason why it exists.
You know, it's kind of interesting. A lot of people get into internet marketing and developing a business because they came across an ingredient. Someone out there created an ingredient and said, this is a terrific ingredient. And it's true. The ingredient itself is fabulous. But the reason why people fail so often is it doesn't come with a complete recipe. It's just the ingredient. You know, it's apples, and hey, you can make great apple pie with this. Well, that's great, but unless you have the rest of the recipe, you are just going to come up with sauce. And that's the point, is a lot of people get into this without understanding all of the steps in advance. We're big believers in knowing what's coming before it comes, planning ahead. Many people get involved with a specific thing, like they might be developing a product that they think is great. Well, let me tell you, the biggest questions that people have is, how do I know this is going to work? Learning the Success Chef way, learning the four-step method is going to answer that question before you ever plunk down a dime on product development, because you will know scientifically that it will in fact work. We teach people how to think about their market differently, that you think about it from their perspective, not your own, and that the market will tell you what it wants. It's very obvious when you start to put those pieces together. And once you know that, the rest of the steps fall into place, and you'll know exactly how to follow the recipe because it's simplified.
Well, it sounds like Success Chef is yet another resource that every dedicated internet marketer should definitely have in their arsenal. I want to thank you, too, again, very much for taking the time to do this call. You can learn more about Michael and Sylvie and Success Chef by checking out the links to their site from within the Pro From Go members area. And I'm also going to type up a little blog post, so you'll be able to find information about Michael, Sylvie, and Success Chef on the Pro From Go blog, which is located at profromgo.com/blog. So you're two of the hardest working, most knowledgeable people, and friendliest people I've had a chance to interview, so I want to give you
Thank you once again
for taking the time to chat with me today, and I hope we can keep in touch.
You're welcome. It was our pleasure.
You're welcome.
Thanks, guys.